Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members
Teresa, Linda, and Annie,
are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature, or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, I'm Tim Kennelty.
And I'm Gene Thomas.
And welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Today's episode is a compilation of segments on everything you need to know about growing veggies.
So listen in for the Veggie Patch with Teresa Golden. Welcome to the Veggie Patch, a recurring segment of this podcast that will focus on growing vegetables and other edible crops. My name is Teresa Golden, a Master Gardener volunteer with Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene counties. Approximately once a month, we'll cover a variety of topics related to growing edible plants. This will range from how to get started with a garden to the specifics about planting, harvesting, and caring for individual crops. Vegetable gardening in the Hudson Valley is a great activity for everyone, young or old. Whether you're using containers, a community garden, or a larger garden plot, growing veggies enables you to supply family and friends with nutritious vegetables for 6 to 9 months of the year. It's terrific exercise, providing both an upper and lower body workout, while also helping to reduce household food expenses. In lieu of a dedicated vegetable garden, you can consider creating an edible landscape. This approach integrates edible plants within a home or community landscape. For instance, you can add blueberry plants to a largely ornamental landscape, or create a yard full of fruiting bushes, edible flowers, vegetables, and ornamental plants. Basil, rosemary, dill, sage, lettuce, peppers, dwarf tomatoes, okra, eggplant, and even Swiss chard can all easily be worked into an ornamental bed or border. The possibilities are endless. So, how do you get started? The first step is to choose a site. Ideally, a full sun garden should have a southern exposure with more than 6 hours of sun each day. 8 to 10 hours of sunshine is ideal, but most vegetables really need at least 6 hours. Look around your yard for possible sites and record how much sun the various areas get to select your best option. Note that the best bet might be a container garden on your porch or patio. However, if you don't typically get that much sun, don't despair. Carrots, beets, Swiss chard, and kale can do well in a garden with only 6 hours of sunlight. And leafy greens such as spinach, arugula, and lettuce can thrive with only 4 or 5 hours of light, but they can also tolerate more. In addition to sun, a critical requirement is water. Locate your garden where it's easily accessible to water. Remember that you'll have to water your plants at least an inch a week, especially in the drier months of the summer. A level, well-drained site is best, but if you are located on a slope, consider creating a terrace to make a level area. Avoid the root systems from trees and shrubs to minimize competition for water and nutrients, as well as to avoid a lot of shade. Make sure to keep your garden at least 75 feet away from black walnut or butternut trees, as their roots exude a chemical that is toxic to tomato, potato, peas, and asparagus plants. And ensure your garden can be accessible to a wheelbarrow or garden cart for moving soil, compost, mulch, plants, as well as to harvest your veggies. One of the advantages of the winter months is that you have the time to plan and dream. Until next time, this is the Veggie Patch.
You're listening to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley.
Welcome back to the Veggie Patch. I'm Teresa Golden from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene counties, and today I'll be talking about what you can plant in your vegetable garden. There are so many different crops that can be grown in the Hudson Valley. But if your garden is like mine, space is limited, so you need to narrow down your options. Best choice of a vegetable to grow is one you'd like to eat. Consider your taste buds and those of your family in your selection process. And think about the number of people you plan to feed. Many vegetables come in seed packages that contain many more seeds than a typical family of four will easily consume. In the resources section of this podcast website, you'll find some guides to help you determine how much to plant. And when selecting veggies to grow, also consider the nutritional value of the plants. Sweet potatoes, kale, peppers, broccoli, cauliflower all come to mind. Consider vegetables that are more expensive to buy, such as garlic, leeks, herbs, heirloom tomatoes, and peppers. Also consider the amount of time you have to care for your garden. This is not a plant-and-done activity, but rather one that requires regular maintenance. If you are a first-time gardener, or if time is an issue, consider focusing on veggies that are the easiest to grow. Cornell University publishes a document called Vegetable Varieties that you might find useful. It includes specific varieties that have been tested to grow well in New York State. Note that you may have to search for seeds or plants of these varieties in multiple catalogs, as they are not typically all available from your local nursery or box store. You can find this document in the resources section of this podcast website. Once you know what you'd like to grow, start thinking about your garden layout. I'd suggest you plant taller crops on the north and west sides of your garden so that they won't shade shorter, full-sun plants. Considering grouping plants by their days to maturity. The advantage of this is that you can plant a second crop in that space once the earlier crop matures. For example, lettuce or spinach can be planted early, followed by broccoli or green beans, being planted in late June or early July. Plant perennial crops to the side of your garden where they won't be disturbed. These are things like asparagus or strawberries, as they don't have to be rotated over the years. Finally, make sure that all garden areas are accessible to a wheelbarrow and there is space to tackle the inevitable weeds that will crop up. With all the seed catalogs that are probably popping up in your mailbox, this is a great time of year to plan your garden and order seeds or plants for the spring. Happy planning!
You're listening to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley.
This is Teresa Golden, and welcome back to the Veggie Patch. So if you've been following along with the previous segments, you may have already picked a spot where you plan to place your garden and what you want to plant. So your thoughts may now be shifting to how to prepare the soil for your vegetable patch. Let's start with the soil. Soil is often an afterthought, but it supports all plant life, which thus supports both animals and humans. Every gardener has a piece of the earth to begin with. The quality of this piece of earth varies enormously. It often gets compacted when walked on or overwatered. It may be too sandy or have too much clay. It may be depleted from previous years of gardening. The reality is that most gardeners don't have ideal soil. Fortunately, almost any soil can be improved. Garden soils should be crumbly, well-drained, and high in organic matter. Gardens benefit from regular additions of organic matter to improve soil structure and to create a reservoir of slow-release nutrients. Organic sources can range from manure, compost, shredded leaves, grass clippings, organic mulches, plant roots, cover crops, buried kitchen scraps, etc. If using tree leaves, please realize that maple leaves break down quickly, while oak leaves decompose much more slowly and really should be chopped up. Do your best to use local sources, and remember that diverse sources equal diverse nutrients. New gardens may need 4 to 8 inches of organic matter the first year or two. Older gardens only need about 1 or 2 a year. Note that it takes 3 cubic yards of compost to cover 1,000 square feet to the depth of 1 inch, so measure the size of your garden to calculate how much you might need. The importance of compost is often enough to convince a gardener to create their own compost pile and make their own organic matter. In a vegetable garden, ideal soil has, by volume, half solid matter and half pore space, with half of those pores filled with water. So mixed organic matter plays an important role by gluing together small minerals and acting like a sponge to hold water. Depending on the quality of your soil, large amounts of organic matter may be needed for several years. So how do you know the quality of your soil in your veggie patch? You can check soil fertility and pH by having your soil analyzed at least once every 3 years. If you think back to your science classes, pH is a measure of acidity and alkalinity of soil. It affects many chemical processes that impact nutrient availability. The optimum pH range for most plants is between 5.5 and 7.5, and most vegetable crops will grow well with a soil pH of 5.5 to 7.0. That said, the optimum pH for a vegetable garden is 6.0 to 6.8. Most cooperative extension locations can test a soil's pH for a nominal fee. The pH of alkaline soil can be reduced by adding acidic organic materials such as peat or sphagnum peat moss or elemental sulfur. Many areas of the Hudson Valley, however, tend to have more acidic soils. To increase soil pH, lime or wood ash can be added in the fall. Note that it takes time for these additives to adjust the pH of the soil. Your local cooperative extension can provide more information about how to do this. So testing your soil and adding organic matter are proven ways to enhance the richness of your soil. Keeping weeds to a minimum and increasing the effective rooting depth of the soil are also proven ways that work. I hope some of these ideas will help to improve your personal veggie patch. Until next time.
You're listening to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley.
Thanks for listening to this update from the Veggie Patch. My name is Teresa Golden, and today let's talk about seed starting. For this subject, you have lots of options. Seeds can either be sown directly into the garden or started in containers, flats, or pots. They can be started indoors or outdoors and then transplanted into the garden. Obviously, you also have the option of simply buying seedlings from a catalog, garden center, or box store that can be directly planted. So why start seeds at home instead of buying plants? Aside from the personal satisfaction of growing plants from scratch, by doing your own seed starting, you can grow plants that will be chemical-free. You can also give plants a head start and thus potentially a longer growing season. The varieties available in your local nursery or garden center may be limited, so seed starting may let you grow heirloom varieties or harder-to-find options. And by using your own containers, you can also save money. Large seeds such as pumpkin, squash, beans, peas, and corn can usually be planted directly into the soil at the correct spacing, so they really don't have to be started indoors. A good rule of thumb is to sow seeds 2 to 3 times deeper than their width. Smaller seeds for crops such as spinach, beets, lettuce, and carrots can typically be gently scraped into the soil, but you'll probably have to thin them to get them spaced appropriately. Soil temperature has a major effect on the speed of germination. This is one reason why many gardeners opt to start seeds indoors and then transplant the seedlings once the soil is sufficiently warm, usually above 60 degrees. A soil thermometer will help you determine when it's safe to do this. Most warm season crops, such as tomato, pepper, and eggplant, are typically started indoors, grown for several weeks, and then transplanted outdoors to ensure a long summer harvest. Cool season crops can also benefit from an early start indoors, so they mature prior to summer heat. You can buy seed starting kits that contain everything you need, except the seeds and soil, or you can use your own trays and containers. Regardless of which approach you choose to grow your own transplants from seed, you will use a soilless growing medium, typically containing peat, perlite, and vermiculite. Moisten the medium and transfer to the containers. Sow seeds in trays following the directions on the seed packet to ensure they are at the right depth and are starting at the appropriate time for your area. Cover the trays with clear plastic to create a high humidity environment and set them on top of your refrigerator or some type of heating pad to help them germinate. Once seedlings emerge, remove the plastic and move the trays under grow lights that should be kept on for 14 to 16 hours each day. Make sure to keep the light no more than 1 to 2 inches directly above the plants to prevent the plants from becoming too leggy. The room temperature should ideally be between 70 and 75 degrees. Keep the soil moist. Please don't overwater them. First leaves that appear are starter leaves. They look alike on most plants. It's not until the second set of leaves that you will see individuality. Once these true leaves appear, you can transplant seedlings to larger containers, making sure not to crowd them. Keep them indoors until the weather is past the danger of frost or the soil temperature is sufficiently warm. Bear in mind that your seedlings will need to be hardened off prior to planting in the ground. The seedlings need to adjust to the wind and to natural sunlight, which can be hotter and brighter than indoor light. Over the course of a few weeks, bring them outside, perhaps in a sheltered spot so they can adapt. After this process, they should be ready to thrive in your garden soil. Happy planting. Until next time, this is the Veggie Patch.
You're listening to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley.
It's time again for the Veggie Patch. I'm Teresa Golden, and today's topic is brassicas. When you were a child, I suspect you were reminded to eat your vegetables. And I suspect one of the vegetables on your plate was either broccoli or cauliflower. They are both members of a group of plants called brassica, which also includes things like cabbage and mustard plants. You might associate brassica with cool weather and root cellars, but this family of easy-to-prepare veggies has something to offer year-round. Brassicas are among the most cultivated foods in the world and some of the most nutritious ones you can eat. The genus is native to Western Europe, the Mediterranean, and temperate regions of Asia. The flowers, seeds, stalks, and tender leaves of most species of brassica can be eaten raw or cooked. Many parts of some species have been developed for food, including the turnip root, the kohlrabi stems, cabbage and kale leaves, cauliflower and broccoli flowers, and Brussels sprout buds. A dislike for cabbage or broccoli results from a compound in these plants which can be perceived as either bitter or tasteless to people, depending on their taste buds. That said, brassica vegetables contain a range of health benefits, like vitamin C, vitamin K, beta-carotene, manganese, and soluble fiber. So let's dive deeper into some of the more common varieties. Broccoli is an edible, bright green or purple plant with a flowering head, sturdy stalk, and nutrient-dense leaves. Broccoli can be eaten in its entirety and prepared in a myriad of ways: raw, roasted, steamed, sautéed, and even battered and fried. Enjoy it chopped up in a salad, steamed for a quick snack, pureed into a pasta sauce, or roasted and served over lentils, rice, quinoa, or other grains with a drizzle of olive oil. Sound yummy? Broccoli prefers to be grown in full sun and well-drained soil, rich in organic matter, but it thrives in cool weather. In warm weather, it is more tolerant of shade. 5 to 7 week transplants can be set out 4 weeks prior to the last frost date. To deter insects, you can cover seedlings with a floating row cover and mulch them with compost when plants are about 6 inches tall. The plants are shallow rooted and thus dry out quickly, so keep them well watered throughout the season. Gather broccoli when the heads are 5 to 10 inches across while the buds are still green and tight, before they turn yellow or open into flowers. Cut them 4 to 6 inches below the flower heads. Note that some varieties will grow smaller heads on their side shoots, extending your harvest until a hard frost. After harvesting, you can soak broccoli heads in cold water until you use them. This will force out any insects and keep the flavor fresh. From a pest perspective, look out for cutworms, which are fat, green, and about 1.5 inches long. They chew on the areas at the top of the broccoli's roots and on the leaves. Placing a collar, such as a tuna fish can with both ends removed, placing that around the seedlings can help deter cutworms. The collar can be removed once the plants are established. Note that fall-planted broccoli often produces higher yields than spring plantings in this region. Another member of the brassica family is the Brussels sprout. These are typically grown to be harvested in the fall because cool weather helps to develop their flavor. Seeds should be sown in early to mid-summer. The plants stand 2 to 3 feet tall and can withstand a light frost. Harvest them when the sprouts or buds at the base of the plant are firm and about 1.5 inches in diameter. The lower leaves can be removed to hasten sprout development, but don't strip all the leaves as they are needed for growth. You can pinch out the growing point at the top of the stem to get larger sprouts. These crunchy seasonal staples that resemble mini cabbages are delicious when their outer leaves are roasted to a salty crisp, leaving the insides tender. Brussels sprouts are best served steamed, roasted, or sautéed, but you can also thinly slice them raw for an unbeatable winter salad. Cabbage is a brassica vegetable that can be leafy green, red, or white. It is known for its densely formed heads. Start seeds indoors for early spring transplants or in beds or flats for fall transplants. Plants can sustain temperatures as low as 15 to 20 degrees Fahrenheit, but it's best not to plant cabbage or any brassica family crop in the same spot year after year, since diseases and insect pests will build up. So make sure to rotate them within your garden. Plant spacing will affect head size, so make sure to space them at least 12 inches apart or more. Harvest a cabbage head when it is firm and before it splits. Mature heads can be left on the plant in the garden for about 2 weeks in the summer and up to 3 to 4 weeks in the fall. Remove the loose outer leaves. If you leave the cut stem in the ground, small heads may develop that can be used. Cabbage prefers rich soil and lots of water. Cabbage can be transformed into a refreshing slaw, sauerkraut, or a braised side dish. Cauliflower, another brassica, is best known for its edible white head, which can be seared in thick-cut steaks, caramelized in the oven, or pureed into a savory soup. But its core stems and leaves can be cooked over high heat to draw out its flavor. You can set out 5 to 7 week-old transplants 3 to 4 weeks before your frost-free date. When their heads are about 2 to 3 inches in diameter, take the outer leaves and fold them up and over the head. Tie them with a string to keep the head from turning yellow. In 1 to 3 weeks, the head should be 6 to 7 inches wide and ready to harvest, approximately 50 to 80 days from transplanting. Cauliflower should be ready to pick when its head is firm and heavy, but before the curb begins to separate or become racy. It is overmature when soft, or when leaves turn yellow. Leave some leaves surrounding the head when harvested to prolong its quality until it's used. As you've heard, there are many, many different varieties of brassica vegetables, so have fun growing them all in your veggie patch. Until next time, nature calls.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank
Sandra Powers
and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Green Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Green Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities